And we're back with another edition of Podcast Quincy's City View with Mayor Tom Koch. I'm Mark Carey, his media director, and thrilled to be so, be such, or should I'm thrilled to be your media director is what I'm trying to say.
I'm thrilled to just be here with you, Mark.
Any better than that. And Mayor Tom Koch is sitting right across from me in his office at City Hall overlooking a beautiful fountain at the Hancock Adams Common. This is his podcast weekly. It's on every Wednesday night is when we upload it, and you can pass it around, spread the word, let your friends know that on Podcast Quincy, you will find City View. Please subscribe to it. Find our social media bits from our official Quincy City of Quincy Facebook page to our City of Quincy Twitter page, as well as our Instagram and YouTube. So please follow us on all those social media outlets, and especially follow this podcast. So Mayor, welcome once again to another edition of City View.
And a beautiful day, beautiful July weather we're experiencing.
After a wonderful July 4th week. Let's talk about your week.
Those folks that have this week for vacation, they picked a good one. It's certainly absolutely gorgeous. I know we waited a while, but June was tough, but it's worth it. Good stuff.
We talk about this. It seems like around this time of year, we get to talk about how patriotic the city of Quincy really is. And because it is sort of the cradle or the American birth of America here in the city of Quincy, the great city of presidents, talk a little bit about 4th of July and why we are so patriotic in our parades that we have in several neighborhoods, not a citywide parades, but lots of really nice parades.
Yeah, you know, we're a city of neighborhoods, and it shows every year. Especially around the holidays, when you have an event like the 4th of July, and you know we get on O'Hara Circle and Adams Shore for 9 o'clock flag raising. They do a little kids' bicycle parade around the circle, and the folks that run the organization down there, Adams Shore, they do a nice job. They give out scholarships to a couple of high school kids from that neighborhood. It's really just really old Americana. And then from there we headed to Squanum, and Squanum is one of the oldest parades around for July 4th. The different neighborhoods put together different floats with different themes. They honored Tommy Dow from Squanum as a grand marshal. Great turnout, good crowds. It was a great day out there. And then from there, we used to go to Four River Clubhouse, but they don't do the field day anymore in the middle of the day. But we headed there from Marymount, and Marymount has a parade also. Their parade, probably not quite as old as Squanum, but darn close. And you get the neighborhoods doing the different floats. You get the antique cars and some great music. And people just, you know, hang out in front of their houses and watch things go by. And it's really neat because you literally go through all the neighborhoods. So I know Gull Point had some stuff. There were other neighborhood things that went on. I couldn't get to everything. The night before, people down at the day before July 3rd and the night before Howes Neck enjoying festivities. And then, of course, watching the Weymouth fireworks across the way in the I think they do it, Wissagusset on that side of the river. And Marymount does a thing the night before the parade on July 3rd. They have a disc jockey down there. They have a road race. And so a lot going on, you know, people having a good time, people enjoying their neighbors and their neighborhood, which is really neat because, you go back a long time ago and, you know, people used to hang out a little bit more on their porches, a little more neighborly. You don't see that quite as much, but you do see it here in these neighborhoods, and it's cool. It really is. You know, it was once said about New York, once you lose your middle class, you lose your neighborhoods, then you lose the city. And we're a viable, strong city because we have viable, strong neighborhoods that people really care. They take pride in their homes and their neighborhood, and it shows. It really does.
Yeah, and there's a lot of American flags flying around, as there should be at this time of year. But as we're approaching also another really historic, a lot of historic things that are happening over the next 10 years, let's say. But even the next few years, one of them being, this week, is John Quincy Adams' birthday. And there's a big celebration that happens every single year for both of the presidents and all of the presidents across the country. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's something that actually President Lyndon Johnson started, to present a wreath to the burial place of all presidents on their birthday. And it's a great tradition. It's been going on for a long time now. And certainly this week we celebrate John Quincy Adams' birthday. And as folks know, he and his wife, Louisa Catherine, are buried next to his father, President John Adams, and his wife, Abigail Adams. So a lot of history right here, right in the middle of the square, with two presidents buried side by side as well as the first ladies. But John Quincy Adams was a very unique figure. And though it's arguably he wasn't the best president, I would suggest he was probably the greatest diplomat in the history of our city. From our city. He was remarkably intelligent, extremely principled. In fact, David McCullough has said in a public lecture, I've heard him say it, that he, in his opinion, John Quincy Adams had the highest IQ by far of any president. And he also said that he thought John Adams, his dad, would have been second, which is fascinating. But you know, you think about it, he was a diplomat, a senator, a secretary of state, and then president. And then after being president, he ran for Congress and became a member of the House of Representatives. So,
for a long time, too.
For a long time. In fact, he said he got the most joy out of that position than all the other positions that he served in. People talk about the Monroe Doctrine. James Monroe was president. John Quincy Adams was Secretary of State. It was John Quincy Adams that wrote the Monroe Doctrine, which was really to set down a line in the sand to the rest of the world that the USA is not going to put up with anything in the Western Hemisphere in our backyard. And really still holds true to today. I mean, that he spoke several languages. He traveled with his father, as we know, on that ship that was, the ship was leaking, and it was all kinds of issues, and ended up, they had to land where they weren't supposed to land, somewhere in Spain, and the ship eventually sank.
And that at that point, he was 14 years old, and his father took him with him to go on his mission to France, right?
To get, yeah, to help to raise money for the Revolutionary War, and they're putting their lives on the line
in the winter. Yeah.
And if the Brits had known that, that you know, they would have been killed and the ship would have been sunk, clearly, you know, as a boy he stood up on Penn's Hill with his mother to watch the burning of Charlestown. But you know, he learned from a very early age the meaning of public service. A brilliant, brilliant kid. I mean, as I said, spoke many languages. And could write in Greek, and just incredible intelligence there, intellect, I should say. But, you know, he became the greatest opponent to slavery in Congress. The Adamses were extremely principled. I mean, John Adams was the same way. Some would argue that's probably why they weren't reelected. They just stuck to their guns. There was no room for compromise. And look, I can see both arguments here, both sides of the argument. You need to have some compromise to enact laws and get things through, but we also need principled people to stand up for what's right. John Adams, as I think people know, was the only president who was a founding father that did not own slaves, again, on principle, not inconvenience.
Right.
And then John Quincy Adams went on to serve in the same ideals as the father, and then the House of Representatives went on to really argue against it very eloquently, and that's what was his nickname when the House was Old Man Eloquent, because when they spoke, people really listened to him. Incredible family when you look at it, obviously John and John Quincy, but right down the line, each succeeding generation served. Charles Francis Adams was mayor of Quincy. He went on to serve as Secretary of War, or the Navy, under President Herbert Hoover. Henry Adams was a great historian. I mean, there's been, even the more recent generations, Peter Adams, who passed away a few years ago, and he was the liaison between the Adams Memorial Society and the City of Quincy. So I had the distinction of, you know, working with him on things all related to Adams and Quincy, particularly some of the park stuff when I was the park director. But he was a decorated helicopter pilot in Vietnam. He had a number of tough crash landings. The guy was incredible. In fact, he eventually succumbed from the effects of Agent Orange. Three of his sons went into the service. I mean, you just look at that family and they epitomize public service. Even to this generation.
That's amazing.
You go back to John Adams and say John Quincy Adams. You think about the intellect, right? And John Quincy Adams put that toward industry rather than public service. That guy would have been a billionaire. I mean, it's amazing how far ahead of his time he was in so many ways. And if you read a little bit about him, you can see that. But I think his greatest accomplishment was as a diplomat. Just a remarkable, remarkable, brilliant person who served this country so well. So, you know, this wreath laying is important to us as Quincyites, but, you know, the people of this nation. And I think even more today than ever should appreciate the Adams story, because when you look at what's going on around the country with taking statues down for various reasons, which I don't necessarily agree with, But the reality is they ought to be building some major monument in D.C. because of what John Adams stood for and what he stood against. Mm. He was so far ahead of his time. And, the John Adams contributions, he was the instigator. He was the rabble-rouser. He was the one in the Continental Congress raising hell, if you will. He's the one that nominated Washington to be the commander-in-chief. He's the one that suggested Thomas Jefferson should be the chief author of the Declaration of Independence. I don't know how the guy slept. He just constantly at it. He drove them all crazy down there. But, he and all of those, and I know we've talked about this before, whether it was on a cable show or podcast, Mark, but, if you don't believe in divine intervention, I think I said it before, then, you got to rethink that. Because when you think of all the incredible minds in that one place, in that one time in history, to create the United States of America, it's absolutely remarkable. Whether you talk about Benjamin Franklin, Jefferson, Washington, Adams, Monroe, Madison, Hamilton. I mean, these people were brilliant, brilliant people. I mean, John Adams wrote the Constitution of Massachusetts in his law office in Quincy. That became the model for the U.S. Constitution. Right, I mean, it's just incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean,
they weren't perfect.
They were not perfect.
But they all believed in a higher power. They all believed in a creator, and that's been referenced in the documents. In fact, John Adams said that the Constitution would only be effective for religious and moral men. Think about that. Mm. So there had to be a baseline of morality and values for us to succeed as a society. Now, my guess is he's probably, if he were here today, would probably be a little surprised in some of the direction we've gone. But and I'm certainly sure that he'd be disappointed in the national discourse that's going on currently. It's too bad. You get the extreme left, you get the extreme right, and this doesn't seem to be any control there in the sense of, I think most effectively over the years we've operated government from the middle, really more to moderate positions. Though it's fine to hold those extreme positions, at some point you got to come back and work with your colleagues in the legislature, work with the various branches of government to get things done. The American people want to see things get done, though they may feel strongly about certain issues. So I'm hopeful that this Congress will get it together to some extent. I know that we're so polarized. You have the Trump camp and then you have the other camp. And it gets discouraging, really. I've stopped looking at the news at night because it's just the same old stuff over and over and
I
over.
Know.
I'm sure I'll get some calls on this, but I'm not a big fan of Trump's style. I'm not a big fan necessarily of his the way he does things, and I would even suggest maybe a lack of class. But I would suggest that some of the stuff he's done has paid dividends for our economy. And I really admire him taking on China. China has been stealing our technology for years, really stomping on us economically in many ways without any retribution. And this is the first guy to stand up and say enough to China. I hope in the end we do get an agreement worked out on the trade and all, but we had to say stop, enough. It was really out of control. So, I know that a ton of time is spent on the relationship with Russia. Russia's economy is smaller than California, and I do think we probably have more in common with Russia in many ways culturally than we do in other places. Now, I'm not looking to declare war on anybody here, but my point is this, that I think that China is the greatest adversary going forward, whether it's politically, economically, socially, spiritually. We have little in common with that government, and so I think we got to keep things in perspective. So I do give the president credit with the whole issue with China, with the economy. It's flying right now. Now, many will argue not everybody's benefiting it. Perhaps there's some truth to that, but the reality is unemployment's been the lowest in 50 years, and all demographics have gone up in that area, whether Hispanic, whether it's Black American, whatever the case may be. Everybody has been lifted by this economy in some way. So you got to give them a little credit here and there. It doesn't mean we have to agree on everything. And, then you see the other side. The whole argument of immigration, for example, the previous presidents have had, in fact, there's clips shown of President Obama saying we got to get tougher on the border. And they were the ones that created the cages down there. And all of a sudden, Trump is Dracula because he's enforcing the law just like the previous presidents have.
The media, too.
The press is out of control on this issue. And AOC from New York, she got caught in big lies on it. You know, there's some great, this country was built on immigrants. I'm absolutely for immigration, but we got to have some rules and regulations. It's harder for you to get back through the airport to come in this country through customs as a U.S. citizen than it is coming across the border of Mexico. So we have to have some rules and regulations, and we have to make sure that people that are entering our country have, you know, are healthy and can contribute to our nation. We can't have people coming in this country and immediately going on public assistance. We're not going to be able to sustain what we know. You know, when more people are taking out than contributing, that's a real problem. And you know, there's a lot of argument about socialism and all of that. You know, the reality is there's more taken out of the system than in contributing, and that's going to be a problem for us down the road. Nobody wants to talk about that. You listen to some of these candidates talking about trillions and trillions of dollars worth of programs, but nobody says how we're going to pay for it. You know, it's right. It's challenging. You know, at the local level, city government, we have to balance the budget every year. We can't have a deficit. We have to balance it every year, just as the state government does. The federal government doesn't have to balance it.
Yeah,
they live in huge, huge deficits and debt. So I guess I went a little crazy.
Well, the sad part about it is that, you know, you making a statement like this is controversial to some, but we can't even have a conversation about it. You pick out things
that's exactly
that,
right.
That you agree. All you did was state some of the things that you agree with.
Right.
And why can't we have that conversation? We can't even discuss that without being labeled right or left or anything else.
No, I agree with that. That's part of the problem right now. That's part of the problem. And, you know, we've had some discussions about abortion, and you know, I'm a pro-life guy. And
me too.
I respect other people that have views. But there's an issue that you can't have an opposing view on. You're against women if you say anything in that regard. So, you know, I hope we can get some of that decorum back, if you will, in the political discourse across the country. I think we do it pretty well in Massachusetts. I think this governor right now, he's got some real challenges he's facing, trying to get squared away some of the systemic failures in the system. But, you know, he's got a great relationship with the Democratic control House and Senate on Beacon Hill. If we can do it here, why can't we do it in D.C., you know?
Decorum is a great word, and decency. Those two, you put those two in the mix, and you can get a lot done.
Hey, listen, you can agree to disagree, and have the conversations, and it should be conversations. It shouldn't be screaming matches.
Exactly.
And that's what this country is built on. And those guys had some. Listen, those founding fathers didn't agree on everything. I mean, no. Adams and Jefferson really went at it before they, you know. Got together again before they die. They become bitter enemies after being great friends.
Some of the worst political ads ever were from those
horrible,
two toward each
horrible
other.
Time. Yeah, it's true. But thankfully, they started writing letters back and forth. And
15 years of letters.
And it was July 4th, the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, and they both died that day. Adams thought Jefferson. In fact, his last words were, "Jefferson lives." Jefferson had already passed, but. Those are the days of Pony Express, so there was no texting and no telegrams. So, pretty remockable that you know when you think
hair
about
raising.
That.
Oh, hair
it's,
raising.
Yeah, it's again. If you don't think the Creator had something to do with the creation of this country, I think you're a little mixed up. But so the Adamses certainly made their contribution, as did so many others at the time. And we're walking in the midst of that. I mean, we in Quincy are walking the same paths and streets that Adams and Abigail and all did. It's remarkable. We're creating the new chapters in American history. We're creating the new chapters in our local history. And you know, nobody lives forever. Everybody passes on. And Adams has left an incredible legacy. And I think it was, I forget who said it, but no man is dead if they are remembered. Mm. And that's quite a legacy that... that these great patriots are remembered to this day. And I do think that, and I think I've probably said this ad nauseum at some point when I talk publicly, is, you know, when I grew up, the history book said that Jefferson was a man of the people and that Adams was a stuffy New Englander. You think about that, you know, Jefferson lived on Monticello with slaves, lots of slaves.
Yeah.
Adams lived on the side of the road where people would pass and engage him and Abigail on issues. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, the Virginians must have written the history. That's why you have a Washington Monument and a Jefferson Memorial in D.C. and nothing for poor John Adams. This experiment called democracy, this great republic that was created, would not have happened without John Adams being part of it. I'm convinced of that. And by the way, John Hancock was no slouch. I mean, John Hancock was the president of the Second Continental Congress. He's recognized out here on the Hancock Adams Common as he was originally from the same area. down the street here from the square at the Adams Academy, where his home was. So he was a wealthy merchant, and he funded the revolution, the initial pilot revolution, out of his own finances. He was very, very successful, as was his uncle. He inherited the business and did very, very well. And again, those guys put on, those were the guys that were sitting pretty. They were living pretty good lives.
Yeah.
You know, even Adams, he didn't have slaves, but, you know, he had a lot of land, he had farms, he was making a good living as a lawyer. You know, Hancock was very wealthy, Washington was wealthy, Jefferson was wealthy. You know, they all had it all to give, and they did. Had it not succeeded, they all would have been hung in the public square, and their properties burned, and their families probably murdered as well. So, you know, we should be mindful of that. In these crazy times that we're living in, people should take a step back, look at some of the history, and what those folks that created this great country, what they put together for us to have these discussions, the great freedoms we enjoy, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, all of those things. So some of these folks that just can't seem to get along ought to take a step back, maybe read the Declaration of Independence, maybe read the Constitution.
And think, you know, it's one of the things, I just watched the HBO John Adams. So I would highly recommend reading David McCullough's book. Although it's wonderful, the first three episodes are great, but John Adams was not a cantankerous guy like the way it was played in the movie for drama. But one of the greatest parts about that miniseries is when Adams was so recognizing that when George Washington left the presidency and the transfer of power, for the first time in modern mankind, has this ever happened where the transformation of power was peaceful? Without, that was another thing.
Well,
was so
and you got to give Washington credit for that.
Yeah.
Washington was revered. I mean, he was like
dignity
top guy. He was the guy just a level above. They all admired him and showed him great reverence and respect. He could have stayed there as long as he wanted.
Yeah, he could have been king.
Absolutely, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But he set the standard. He almost didn't want to do a second term, and they talked him into that. They knew they knew at the time they needed his stability, his credibility, reputation to keep guiding the ship, because it was a while before we got it right, and we continue to work to get it right. You know, let's face it. But Washington's one of the great contributions was that smooth transition of power. He walked away. He gave up the crown, as they say. It's pretty remarkable. Then, of course, Adams became, after being the first vice president of the U.S., became the second president of the United States, and kept us out of war.
Kept us out of war with France. Wonderful. Well, we didn't talk about the issues we were going to talk about, but I'm glad we went off on this because it was kind of fun. Thank you for sharing that. We definitely want to remind you once again on this Thursday. This will go up on Tuesday night, this podcast, the week after 4th of July week. But on Thursday afternoon at noontime, Bob Damon has put together a great program. I know you'll be there for John Quincy Adams's celebration of the wreath laying, if you will, his birthday celebration, as we do in October for John Adams. But also we have a guest speaker, Jordi Albereda. Yeah, he's from Spain. He's actually a great guy. He's actually working with us, and we'll talk about this in the future, but he's running something called Fair Saturday. We're the first in the United States to have it. It's a big European festival that happens one day in Saturday in November, and we'll talk about that more in the future. We're just going to tease a little bit. It's a great cultural event for the whole community. But Jordi will be the guest speaker on that day.
And it is open to the public at noontime. The First Parish Church, the Church of the Presidents, as we call it, or as John Adams referred to as the Stone Temple. So it is open to the public. We encourage people to come and enjoy. It's really a neat, solemn occasion. You know, we've gotten used to it because we have two a year here. There's communities in this country that never experienced that because they don't have a president from their community. We have two a year here. That's pretty remarkable. So if you're out and about and you're looking for something to do on that day, please stop in. It's a great take.
And I would recommend something that you put out as a pilot program, Mayor, a couple of years ago, and it's still in its pilot format, but it's actually doing really, really well right now. So we have a free tour Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. For the Old Town Hall right in Quincy Center, right in the middle of Hancock Adams Common. Then, of course, the incredibly amazing Hancock Cemetery, and then we hand the tour off to the Church of Presidents, and that's free Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it's actually getting a lot of steam, and it's they're busy. It's free, just show up. We have a tour guide, a guided tour. So thank you all very much for listening to another edition of Podcast Quincy's City View with Mayor Tom Koch. I'm Mark Carey. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe, tell your friends, find us on social media, and we'll see you next week. We'll hear you next. Well, you'll hear. Yeah. Bye-bye.